Holding on Chafala from a days, three lines from the bottom, the first line of the wide line. More on this topic of Kiyum Shtaris, where we said a Shtar is brought to Beis Din, and Beis Din has to validate the signatures on it and write a henpik. And we said it has to be done by Beis Din of three. Amar of Abba, Amar of Huna, Amar of Shloisha Shiyoshvu L'kayim as a Shtar, if three people sit down as a Beis Din to validate a Shtar, V'kara Ar Al-Echad Mehen, and then somebody points out an objection against one of them. Somebody objects that one of them is puzzled.
After they sat down, right.
So before they all sign together on the henpik, they can give edus on him, and then he'll be able to sign. Who is the they who can give edus? From Rashi, it seems the two edim themselves, the two other dayanim themselves. You have the dayanim of Ram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov are sitting down. Somebody comes and objects that Yaakov is possible to be a dayan for reasons that we'll discuss in a minute. What we're saying is, before they sign the henpik, Avraham and Yitzchak, who know Yaakov and know that he's not possible, are able to get up and give edus that he's kosher. According to Tosfos on Chapez and Aleph, they have a long explanation from Rabbi Nachmanano, where one aspect of it is it doesn't mean the dayanim themselves; it means that two other edim can come before this Beis Din at that point and give edus on him that he's kosher. V'chosim, and then he can sign along with them. Mishachosmu, but after they sign the document, after they sign the henpik, in me'idun all of them, they can't give edus on him. So according to Rashi, the vote is at that point these other two dayanim are negeya b'davar. They have a vested interest in declaring this guy who sat with them to be kosher, because it would look bad that they sat in a din torah and signed on something with someone who's possible. So once they signed already, then we disqualify them from giving edus on it. And according to Tosfos' explanation, the vote is that according to Tosfos' explanation, when this error comes up, when this objection comes up, what it means effectively is this sitting of Beis Din has now become bottled. There's no more sitting of Beis Din, because the Beis Din has to be made up of three kosher edim. We're going to talk about what kind of error just a minute. But there can be a kind of error that makes it that now it's considered as though the Beis Din is not sitting anymore. So therefore, if it happened after the signature, it makes a difference whether it happened before or after they signed on the thing. If the error was taken care of before he signed, then good. Then they're sitting as a new Beis Din effectively, and now everything's good. Whereas otherwise, it comes out that he signed when the Beis Din had already ceased to exist. If they're only able to give aegis afterwards. So the question is, Ara Demai, what kind of objection is being raised against the kashrus of this dayan? E Ara de Gazlanusa, is it that there's an error that somebody is claiming, that people are claiming that he's a thief, which then he's posulaitus? Well, then what's the problem? Trey or Trey Ninu. You have two Adim versus two Adim. You have, what's the error? You have two Adim coming to Beis Din and saying, you know, Dayan Yaakov over here is actually a Gazlan. And what are we saying? You have two other edim, according to Rashi, the other two dayanim, according to Tosfos, two other edim in Ashok, that are coming and saying he's not a gazlan. So what's the problem? Trey or Trey, you know, you have two against two. According to Rashi, the vote is that even if you have two other edim, but since you had two edim to begin with that say that he's no good, and now you have another two that say that he is good, we have a suffix over here. That's not enough to make him kosher. So Tosfos is one objection of Tosfos to Rashi is, why? If you have two against two, give the guy his cheskes kasherus. Why should he say there's a problem? So the Rif learns somewhat like Rashi that indeed we're talking about that you have a suffix, and the Rif says, what's the problem? The problem is, on the one hand, you want to give the guy a cheskes kasherus, as Tosfos is arguing. On the other hand, you have a chazaka of where the money is right now. You have a chazaka on the money itself. The fact that you have two edim versus two edim about this guy weakens his cheskes kasherus enough that it's not any that it's weaker now than the chazaka of the money. And therefore you can't write the henpik and declare that money has to be taken from Plony and given to Plony on that basis.
So he is kosher, but not enough.
But not enough to override the chazaka of the money. Right. Yeah. So that's if it's an error of Gazlonus, so according to Rashi, and the reason the vote is, even if you have two other Edim, how would it help? You still have a Suffolk on the guy. And if the error is that they're claiming that there's a flaw in his Mishpacha, for example, Rashi says they claim that he's an Eved. They claim that the third Dayan is actually an Eved. So what's the problem? Gili Milsa Balmahu. What's going to happen? We're trying to make a distinction between before and after they signed. But even if the Edom only come after he signed, so what? All they're doing is they're clarifying the situation that existed before. It's not like they're saying before he was an Eved and now he's not. They're saying all along he hasn't been an Eved. So what's the problem?
He has not been an
Eved. He hasn't. That's the thing. There's the two Edom that are coming to say that he's kosher because that's what we're talking about. We're talking about the two Edom originally came and said he's an Eved. Now you have two other Edom coming and saying he's not an Eved. There it's not a matter of that we put two against two and say that he's not kosher. Here we say it's a matter of gili milsa ba'alma. It's a matter of showing what the actual facts are. And as Rashi says, once such a chashad comes up, they're going to check it out very carefully. And eventually they're going to find out that there's no basis for the original claim that he was an Eved. Well, if that's the case, then what's the difference? Even if that only takes place after the chasima, what's the problem? We're not just relying on those two Edim. We're relying on that they're going to check out the situation very carefully. Who cares if they're biased? The fact is they're going to come out. No, but we're assuming. Obviously, if they find out after the chassima that he's an Eved, then there's nothing to talk about. Obviously, then the hen pick is no good. No, we're talking about even we find out afterwards that he was a kosher Dayan after all, but we're saying after the chassima, after the hen pick is signed, it's too late. The question is why? If the claim is that he was an Eved, even after the hen pick is not too late.
That's enough
for
you to Dayanim to say that he's not
Eved. I guess
he's strong.
Yes, so you still have to. Rashi says, what concern is there about that these guys are biased in the Eidus? Dover zeh tzrichen hein levarer. It's something that they are going to have to check out. But Dover also they go into. It's something that's eventually going to, the facts are going to be found out. She yivdiku achra b'shivura Dover. They're going to check carefully into the thing until it's clarified. Yeah.
So let's say they sign, and immediately afterwards these Eidim come.
What we're talking about is the error happened. What we're saying is the error happened before they signed. The question is it good enough to cancel the error after they sign? Are they allowed to say, let's go ahead and sign this hand pick and we'll deal with the error afterwards? So that's the thing.
If it comes before the chasima.
Yes.
And then the basing signs, and that is it
and,
enough?
Right. Is it good enough to fix the matter afterwards? Right. So if it's a matter of claiming that he's an Eved, what's the problem? Let him go ahead and sign, and then afterwards we'll figure out the situation. Tosfos explains differently Tosfos is explaining this whole Gemara differently, and one thing is that one objection of Tosfos to Rashi's explanation is if the claim is that he's an Eved, how does it help if you have two Edim afterwards who come and say he's not an Eved? The rule is, even if you have 100 people later come and say he's not an Eved, you still have two against two. You still have the same problem of his cheskes kashrus. So again, Tosfos goes into this. So therefore, Tosfos gets into this idea of that the basic question is whether the original sitting of Beis Din became botel or not. Where if the idea is, if the claim is that the guy is an Eved and it turns out that he wasn't, then it shows that all along they were sitting as a valid Beis Din. There was no time when the session of Beis Din was broken up and now it has to be reconstituted.
And if it was not, then
then there shouldn't be a problem. The answer is La'olam Emalach Ira de Gazlunu. So you can, after all, go back to the original session. The error that the objection to his kashrus is they're claiming that he's a Gazlun. But Ka'amri Hani, and what it is the second set of Edim are saying, Yad Inan Beid Ovid Tshuva. We know that he did Tshuva. He returned the Gzela. He did whatever else he's supposed to do Tshuva. So if the second two Edim were to come and say he didn't steal, you're right. You would give him his Cheskes Kashrus back and you could continue. But in this case, if they're saying that yes, at the time, he was at one time a Gazlan, but now he did Tshuva, then yes, then it makes a difference between before and after the signatures, whether we allow them to give such aiders. After the three of them signed,
that's
as Rashi is saying, after the three of them signed, we're saying we're not going to allow the first two aiders, we're not going to allow the two Dayanim, according to Rashi, to come and give aiders that he did Tshuva, because at that point they're biased. They might have a reason to claim that he did Tshuva when he didn't fully do Tshuva because they don't want to look bad that they signed with somebody who's puzzled. Another din, Amar Rav Zera, Ha Milsim Rav Abba Shmili, I heard the following din from Rav Abba, the Ilav Rav Abba Demin Akko Shachta, and if I had not, and if it weren't for Rav Abba from Akko, who reminded me of it later, Rashi says, I would have forgotten it. The din is as follows. Gimel Sheyoshva L'chaim Es Ashtar, you have three Dayanim sat down to certify Ashtar, Umet Echad Mehem, and then one of them died before they signed. So they have to write on the henpik, but Moisef Tlosa Habeina, we were sitting all three together, and one of them is not here now. Because otherwise, when you see only two signatures at the bottom of it, people are going to think that you had a based in of only two being Mekayimit, and that's no good.
So that implies that what they write on the star is the equivalent of his signature?
No, it just means as a practical matter, we can only have two signatures right now. The three of them did check out the shtar. The three of them did validate the actual signatures on the shtar before they had a chance to sign the shtar. One of them had a heart attack. So now at the bottom of the henpik, we're going to have only two signatures. But three of them actually checked it out. So we need to clarify. You know why there were only two signatures? Because the third guy died before he could sign.
You have to consider it keeping the
shtar. Yes, because the three of them were mekayim it. Yeah. However, if the henpik actually uses the expression that this shtar came before us who were sitting as a beis din, then you don't need to write anything about b'chad le'soi, because the very fact that they were calling themselves a beis din automatically implies three. Question is why? Maybe not. Maybe it was actually a chutz b'dika beis din, meaning that there were really only two dayanim. The Chiddush Shmuel, and they would have thought that it's a valid beis din, like Shmuel says. The Amar Shmuel, Shnayim Shadonu Dineim Din. Shmuel says that if two, we talked yesterday about the idea that a beis din by definition has to be an odd number of people, so there's no deadlocks, no ties. But Shmuel says that technically, if two people do judge a din Torah together, Dineim Din, it's a valid din. Elisha Nikra beis din Chotzef, but it's considered a chutzpah to a beis din because it's a chutzpah that they're going against this idea that you need to have an odd number. So, if they're writing Lakanmona Beit Dina that came before us, the Beit Din, maybe they were just sitting as a Beit Din of two. Why shouldn't you have to clarify that there were three of us and one of them died? The answer is, because not just any Beit Din. It says in this henpik, for example, that it was done by the Beit Din of Rav Ashi. And Rav Ashi is not just an example. Rav Ashi doesn't mean specifically him. It just means an example. It means somebody... The God of Adur, the great person, the great Talmud Chacham of that generation, or one of the great Talmud Chacham of that generation, who can be expected to know the dinim. They're going to know either that the halacha is not like Shmuel, or even if the argument is that even if the halacha is like Shmuel, that you're not going to do a based in chotzer. Okay, still the question is, so what? Who says that? I mean, when we say the Beis Din of Rav Ashi, who says Rav Ashi himself is actually a member of the Beis Din? Maybe it just means a Beis Din made up of members of the yeshiva of Rav Ashi. He himself is not part of it, let's say, and maybe they hold like Shmuel, that it's okay. The answer is, Dichtibe v'oma lona Rabbana Ashi. Yes, but we would be talking about a case where the henpik actually says that Rabbana Ashi, our Rebbe, Rav Ashi, told us to go ahead and write this henpik. So again, obviously Rav Ashi knows the halacha. Rav Ashi or any other God of Batur or like that knows the halacha. Or even if he thinks the halacha is like Shmuel, he's going to know not to do a based in chatzuf. So therefore you're covered by saying that it was done by the explicit command of Rav Ashi. That's as good as saying that it was a based in of three. So even if you only see two signatures at the bottom, everybody's going to realize that that's because one of them died.
Presumption that is your point.
Right. Yeah.
And if not, then?
If not, then you would have to write the nusach that we said before. You'd have to write that there were originally three and one died. Going back to the matter of Hapesha Asa Hapesha Hitu, which we started the parak with and we've been discussing off and on all this time, and going kind of more back to the topic of the Masechta about husbands and wives. Isha Sha'amra Eshet Isha. You see, the Mishnah says, if a woman says that I was an Eshet Ish, Ugrushani, but I'm divorced now, Nemenes, then we believe her. In other words, we're talking about we didn't know beforehand that she was ever married, Bechlal. Now she moves to town and she starts introducing herself to the local Shadchanim. You should know, I used to be married and now I'm divorced. Nemenes, then we believe her. Shapesh also, Shapesh Hitzer. She could have said I was never married. Well, it's more than Migur. It's a Pesha Asa Pesha Hitzer. We talked off and on over the last couple of days, a Machlokas Rishonim, whether a Pesha Asa Pesha Hitzer is an extension of the idea of Migur or whether it's a separate din of its own. However, v'im yesh edim shalitza eishes ish. But if there were edim that she was to begin with an eishes ish, v'hi emetes gurushani, and now she's saying I'm divorced. Ain't an emetes, then we don't believe her. Same problem, because then you don't have a pesha asa pesha hitzir.
Sounds obvious.
But that's the various cases that we have to talk about. And besides, we're going to talk on Amud Beis. There's a difference between whether she says I'm divorced or she says my husband died. There's a difference in those dinim. The dinim about her husband dying, we learned about in Yevamos, is a whole different issue.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. But the point is, in other words, even, you know, you take, again, we're going to talk about it more on Amud Beis, but, you know, we learned in Yevamos, you know, if we knew that a woman was married, and then one day she shows up at Beis Din and says, my husband's dead, we allow her to be married, right? Because Isha Taiko Mintzvah, which are, so why isn't it the case over here when she says I'm divorced? That we'll talk about in the Gemara. Amr and Mishbet, similarly. Now, for the next thing we need to know, we talked about it briefly before in the first parak, and we're going to talk about it more in the next couple of dafim, that a woman who was taken captive by Goyim is, we have to assume she may have been violated by them, and therefore she's also to marry a Kohen. So, if a woman comes and says, Amr and Mishbeisiu Tahorani, she says, I was taken captive by Goyim, but I'm Tahor, they didn't get to me. Nemenes, and again, we believe her, Shapesha also, who are Pesha Hitir. Yeah, even though there's a Chazaka, as we said, before, that the
Chazaka, we said previously, the
In the first parak, when we talked about the concept of migur and chazaka, we weren't talking about a pesha asur or a pesha hitu yet. We only began discussing that in this parak. We didn't really discuss the interplay of that with chazaka so much.
So in this case,
yes, there is a chazaka that the goyim are promiscuous, and that they're likely to have raped her. But we have a pesha asur, a pesha hitu overrides that. Yeah.
Why?
Because it's a pesha asur, a pesha hitur, a powerful thing. We're saying that it gives us the ability to be able to say that, yeah, she was taken captive, but somehow she managed to save herself. We're going to talk about later in the parak. There's different possibilities how that could happen anyway.
It's not a general
thought. It's not 100% that every woman who's captured by Goyim is raped. It's a high likelihood, but in this case, yeah. Similarly, v'im yesh edim shenishbis, but if there were edim that she was taken captive, v'yem meres taharani, and she says, I'm tahor, ein ne menes, then we don't believe her. The imnishanisas bo edim, but if after she married edim came, harezolaitet said that she doesn't have to divorce her husband. Now, which part of the Mishnah is this last sentence talking about? That we'll talk about in the Gemara tomorrow. Gemara says, Amar Rabasi, minayim la pesha asur a pesha hitir, where b'chlal do we know this concept of a pesha asur a pesha hitir? Minatora, where do we know it? Minatora. Because the pasuk says, "As biti nasati leisha zeh leishva," the Torah describes when it describes the situation of moti shemra. We'll learn much more, but we'll learn all the details of moti shemra later on in the fourth parak in a few weeks. That's the shem. But the gist of it is that a couple gets married. The husband comes based in claiming that he has evidence that his wife was unfaithful after the erusin, which, if it's true, should be chayiv mitzvah. So if it turns out it's true, then she is indeed Chayiv Misa. If not, if it turns out, then we'll learn in the Gemara the various details of the claims and counterclaims and whatnot. If it turns out that it was a false claim, then we give the husband Malkus. He has to pay her a fine, and he has to stay married to her and is never allowed to divorce her. Now, the Torah introduces the claims and counterclaims in Beis Din. It says, the husband comes and claims that I didn't find Sulim, which means it's more than just Pesach Pasuach Matzasi that we talked about from the first parak. Here it's, he's claiming that I have actual evidence that she was Mizana during the time of the Erusin. And the father gets up in Beis Din and he starts saying, "As biti nosati leisha ze leisha, I gave my daughter in marriage to this man as a wife. And he hated her, and here he's trying to make up stories about her." Now the expression "as biti nosati leisha ze leisha," when he says leish osra, if the father were to just say "as biti nosati leish," I married my daughter off. Remember, we learned that a father is able to marry off his daughter when she's a ktana or a naira. He has the right to do that. We'll learn much more about that later in the Masechta. If he were to say "as biti nosati leish," I married off my daughter to a man without specifying which one, that would asser her. That declaration would make her asser to everybody. When he continues, "Hazeh," this man, "hitira," Then he's being matter her to that one man. So therefore we see
to
a pesha
one man.
To that one man, because she's an Eishes Ish, she's also to everybody else. So therefore, so that there's a pesha also a pesha hisir. The same father who is saying that my daughter is also to the whole world, in the same breath is saying but she's mutter to this man. Which, by the way, also in our Mishnah, when we talk about the two cases of the woman who claims that I was an Eishes Ish and I was divorced and I was divorced, or she says I was a Shavuya and but I wasn't raped, are we talking about that she has to say those two things besides Kedibur or not? Here, in the case of Espitin Asati Le'ish Hazeh, presumably we're talking about it's all one long sentence. That's the way the Torah frames the story. So in this case also over here, is it that it has to be all in one breath? All but says to the dibur, or maybe not. So Tosfos discusses that, and many other Rishonim and Achronim discuss that issue. In Shulchan Aruch actually it paskins. There are different opinions among the Rishonim in Shulchan Aruch. It paskins that yes, if a woman says I'm an Eishes Ish, and later on after Tosfos de dibur she says but I was divorced, we don't necessarily believe her. Because the whole apesha also apesha hitzer would have to be immediately, but that's the chalal question. Does apesha also apesha hitzer have to be all at once, or can it be even with a break in between?
There is a break.
And if there is a break, then not necessarily can we believe her.
Only with Amasla.
Only with Amasla. We'll talk about in the Gemara. Yeah.
So, come back on the
Esbiti Nasati. Yeah.
Nasati. Ish.
Yeah.
Or Ish Azay. If she says the father says the Ish,
then that would make her also to everybody. Because that would mean, in other words, I was Mekadosh her to somebody, and I don't know who that somebody is.
How can a father not know to who his daughter was?
Yeah, he sent a Shliach, for example, and he's not sure who then, and the Shliach was Mekadosh somebody and then died on the way back. They say, by the way, there's an interesting vote that I don't remember, I think from the Al-Shech HaKadosh, that says, when we say in the Haggadah, Arami Oved Avi, where do we ever find that Lavan tried to destroy the Jewish people? The answer is, not necessarily Lavan, but Besuel, actually, when he tried to poison Eliezer. What happened? If Eliezer had died, he was already Mekadosh Rivka. Yitzchak wouldn't be able to marry any woman in the world because she might be the daughter or the sister or the mother or whatever of his Arusa. She herself would already been sunken in the Tumah of Aram Naharaim, of Choron, and she wouldn't have bothered going to look for Yitzchak, and there never would have been a Jewish people. So therefore we blame Besuel and Lavan for that attempt to abort the whole coming into existence of the Jewish people. Anyway. Okay. So the ish also has eritira. The question is, lomali kros svarahi. Why do we even need a pasuk to tell us a pesha asra a pesha hitzer? It's an obvious logical thing. Who asra over who shariva? Obviously, if he's the one who's capable of declaring her asra, then he's the one who's capable of declaring her mutter. Ella, so no, you're right. We don't need the pasuk as biti nasati l'ish hazeh to teach us this din. You're right. You can learn it from svara. And by the way, Mephoshim point out, the implication of this Gemara is something that you can learn from Svara can just as well be considered something d'araisa. I think the Noda B'Yehuda talks about, for example, that we see from that, for example, given that the Gemara explains in Brachas that saying Brachas before food is really a Svara dika thing. If you have to make a Bracha before learning Torah, how much more so you should have to make a Bracha before eating food? Well, then in that case, brachas on food have a certain degree of being d'araisa. In practice, we consider them in reality to be d'rabbanan. Therefore, if you have a suffix bracha, it's lahakol, you don't say another bracha. But we see from this Gemara over here that it has a certain degree, a certain claim of being d'araisa.
Can be both.
Anyway, ela ki itzrich kro l'chidur Rav Huna Amar Rab. You're right. Actually, what do you need the pasuk for? You need it to teach us the din that Rav Huna said in the name of Rab. The Amar Rav Huna Amar Rab minayin la'av shenem and lesser is bitum in atorah. How factor do we know that a father has the right to aser his daughter min atorah, meaning that he's able to be mekadosh her to somebody, and then we believe him, and then she's also to everybody else. How do we know he has that right? Because the pasuk says I've given my daughter to a man, so we see he has the right to do that. Tosfos Yishonim at the bottom, it's in Parshas Kisetze. Tosfos Yishonim over here points out at the bottom that the you would think that anyway. I mean, the fact that he has the capability of being Mekadosh, of course he can have, of course he can declare that she's also terribly. The difference is, Tosfos Yeshayahu says he doesn't. He's not being able to be Mekadosh is not a unilateral thing. He needs to find a chosen who's willing to be Mekadosh. So you can't also, so you need this pasuk to teach us that even though it's not something that he's able to do unilaterally because he needs somebody else to be Mekadosh, nevertheless, though he does, we do believe him on his own if he says that she's also to everybody.
Against the will of the
Tana. As a Tana, right, or as a Naira, yeah.
As a Naira also?
Yep. Yeah. Okay, then Hazer Lomali, so what do we need the word Hazer in the Pasuk? The answer is Mibaylelech the Tana Rabbi Yonah. We need it for what Rabbi Yonah taught in a Braise, the Tana Rabbi Yonah. When the Pasuk says it's Biti Nasati Leish Hazer, it means Hazer Veloyle Yavam. It means as opposed to the Yavam. This whole concept of Moti Shemra that the Torah is describing over there, that whole claim, that whole scenario that the Torah describes over there would not happen with a Yavam. It can only happen with the husband who actually was originally Mekadosh her and married her. But suppose that he died before they ever got married, so she should still be a Vesula. The brother-in-law does Yibum. Then he wants to claim a Tainus Vesulam over there. He wants to claim that I didn't find her a Vesula and I have evidence that she was Mezana. No, the whole thing doesn't happen. We don't consider her a Moti Shemra. We don't fine him. We don't apply all the penalty because the Pasuk is saying Hazeh. That the father is saying, I gave my daughter in marriage to this man. The Yavam he didn't give her in marriage to. That the Yibum happened automatically. Well, Zik happened automatically, and the Yibum happened as a, yeah. It wasn't directly the father's doing. We learn in a Braisa, Ha'isha Shamer Eshe Sishani, if a woman says, I'm married, V'chazer Rama Pnuyani, and then later she says that I'm unmarried, Ne'emenes, then we believe her. Didn't she declare herself also to everybody? By saying, I'm a married woman, implies that she's also to everybody else. How do we believe her now to take that back? You're talking about a case where she gave an amasla. She gave a logical excuse for what she had said originally. She said, originally, when I said that I was married, I had a special, I had a reason to falsely claim that. We're going to see
in a second.
Rashi says, by the way, the derivation of the word amasla, Rashi says, it's related to the word mushal, Rashi says, that it's like a mushal on a reason. She gives a logical understanding of why originally she claimed to be married when she wasn't. But yes, when I was in yeshiva, I don't know how far back this goes among Rosh Yeshiva, but they used to say when you have an excuse why you relate to the yeshiva or whatever, the Hebrew word for an excuse is amasla. It comes from our Gemara over here. They used to say amasla stands for the word ms loy, not true. It may be a very nice excuse, but it's not.
It's the problem that the word ms is contained in this word.
Yeah. Yeah, so according to Rashi, it's just coincidental, but yeah, according to this Rashi, the Rashi Yeshiva, yeah. Anyway, so she gives an amasla. Tanya nami hachi, we learned similar in the Braise. So Amr eshes ishani b'chaz rama pnuyani. If she says, I'm married, and then she said, I'm not married, ain't an amenis, then we don't believe her. V'im nosna amasla, d'vrenen an amenis. But if she gives a logical reason for why she said that originally, then we do believe her. There was, in fact, a case with a great, meaning a rich woman. She was also very beautiful. So naturally, being rich and beautiful, people are always going and knocking at her door and trying to propose marriage to her and trying to be Mekadosh. So finally, to get rid of them, she said, I'm already Mekadosh. Go away. Later on, she went and accepted one of her suitors and accepted kedushin. Amr lo chachamim mara islas is kain. So the chacham asked her, what happened over here? What was all that about? Amr lam, she said, but tchila shabar al ayan nashem she'enim uganim. Originally, the people who were proposing marriage to me were not good people. They weren't people suitable for me. They're just after my money or my beauty or whatever, but they're not really the right ones for me. So to get rid of them, I'm out to mekudesh asani, so I said, I'm married. But now that somebody decent came along, somebody who I tack a click with, who's marrying me for the right purposes, then I'm willing to be niskadish.
Sounds very.
So that was the amasla, in other words, that she's trying to do it, to get rid of unwanted suitors.
Well, the rabbi is concerned that she was already mekudesh before that this.
Yeah, then maybe she needs a get before the second kedushin are going to be filed. Yeah,
right.
Yeah. V'zu halacha heller of Acha Sar Habira lefnei Chachamim b'Usha. Rav Acha Sar Habira brought this halacha in front of the Chachamim in Usha. Sar Habira literally means the chief of the Bira. Bira means like a palace, like Shushan Habira. There was actually, I think I've seen people who explain that we learned in Sochem and in one or two other places that there was an area on the Har HaBayis called the Bira. You might mention the Machlokas over there, whether the Bira is another name for the whole Har HaBayis complex or whether it meant specifically one particular fortress over there. This from Acha Sar HaBira may have been somebody who was in charge in the Bis Mikdash. He's giving this Usha where the Sanhedrin was there several decades after the Churban. So it may be when he was younger he was the Sar HaBira in the Bis Mikdash, and now that he's an old man, he's telling this to the Chachamim. Anyway, V'amru, and they said, Im nasna masla l'vera an emenes. Yeah, as long as the woman gives a proper amasla for her words, then we believe her. So like in this case.
How do we decide what's proper and what's not?
Well, we look and see whether it's logical. In this case, for example, actually the Chassam Sofer talks about this. Why are they using the expression im nasna amasla l'vera? In this case, it wasn't im; she did give an amasla because the amasla itself has to be carefully checked out. We see that's why the Chachamim are actually asking her mara islatis pain. Why'd you do this? They didn't just take at face value that, you know what, if she's willing to accept kedushin from somebody, it must mean that she wasn't telling the truth all along. No, they actually had to interrogate her to make sure to make sure that everything is kosher, is on the up and up. And I'm asking as an excuse, the reason, yeah. Bamine Shmuel Merav. Now Shmuel asks Rav a question. How about a similar case? Amra Tmeyani, what if a woman says to her husband, I'm Tomei, I'm Nida, V'chazir V'am Atarani, and then she retracts that and says, I'm actually Tahar. Mahu, what would be the din? Different Mephoshim point out different reasons why we would or wouldn't think to compare it to the case of Eishes Ish. There's a number of differences. On the one hand, with the Marsha points out that with the Eishes Ish, it's because it's a public thing when she claims that I'm Mekudosh or not Mekudosh, therefore it's easier to see, like we just did with this case of this woman, it's easier to see whether there's a valid reason for her to have been claiming that. Whereas if she's claiming Tmeyani and then Taharani, not necessarily, that's more of a private thing. It may not be so easy to tell whether the Amasla is valid. On the other hand, we can take the view. I mean, there's other considerations also. If she says Eishes Ish ani, then it means that And we weren't to accept her masla, it means she's also forever, because since she's not really Mekodesh, there's nobody she can get a get from to be master her, so she'd be stuck. Whereas a nida, if she claims she's nida, so what? Go to the mikvah, what does it hurt you? And yet, on the third hand, we could argue the other way around. An Eishes Ish, if she's claiming I'm an Eishes Ish, she doesn't have the power to release herself from that, because she can't give herself a get. Whereas a nida can go herself, is able to go to the mikveh, so maybe we should believe her. Then maybe we should believe her if she says to Harani, because she could just as well have gone to the mikveh. So there's a lot of different considerations over here. So what would be the din? Amrulay, and Rav tells him, Aspazu, yes, also in the case of Nida. Im nasa amasla l'dvera an emenes. Yes, if she gives an amasla, if she gives a logical reason for why she said she's Tomei to begin with, nemenes, then we will believe her. Now, what would be some reasons? Tosfos quotes over here from a Yerushalmi, a case that actually involved Shmuel himself. Well, actually, you know, we'll put in the next line, and then we'll talk about various possible reasons. Tanamine Aboin Zimnin. Shmuel learned over this din 40 times from Rav. He wanted to make very sure that he knows this din, that he knows this din inside out.
Concerning the Nida,
that if she says Tmeyani and then she says Tahorani, that as long as she has a reasonable sounding amasla, then we believe her. So Shmuel learned this from Rav 40 times. Even so, Shmuel did not want to do that like that with himself, when a case like that happened with him himself. What was the case? In other words, he would paskin like that for other people, like what Rav is saying, but he was machmer on himself.
Not to accept
the amasla, but to consider her tamei until she actually goes to the mikveh. What was the case? The Tosfos quotes from the Yerushalmi. One time Shmuel wanted to have relations with his wife, and she said she's tamei. Next day she says I'm tahor. She says what? He asked her what happened. She says esma lahavas bichela. Yesterday I wasn't feeling strong enough. You know, like they're standing. You know, in the vernacular, you know, I had a headache. Yeah.
She lied.
One second, no, but that's considered an amasla.
No, but you're so, lying.
One second. So Tosfos brings that, and therefore, so that was the case where Shmuel asked Rav and said that really you can believe it, but Shmuel was machmer on himself. The Shittim Kubetzis points out about that. He says, what kind of case could that possibly have been? I mean, so what? And if she had told him outright, I have a headache, what was, you know, would Shmuel have forced her? I mean, you know, we're not talking about that kind of person. So therefore, he has a different explanation. He quotes from the Gaon more of a different Girsa in that Yerushalmi, that what it was is, we know there's a din that a husband and wife are not allowed to pass anything to each other directly from hand to hand while she's nidah. So Shmuel and his wife had that. That was their standard thing. If he handed her, for example, the Kodesh HaBracha at the end of benching, and she would take it, it would mean she's Tahar. If she didn't take it, it would mean she's not Tahar. The one time she didn't take it after the meal, which he assumed that meant she's Tameh. She didn't actually say in so many words I'm Tameh, but she didn't take the cup, so he assumed she's Tameh. Next day she tells him, actually, I'm Tahar. What happened? She says, instead of like havas bichela, that I didn't have the strength, the girsa of the gaonim is that she says, I didn't want to take the cup because of the covered of your sister. I don't quite understand. I didn't have a chance. I didn't find the original shuvas gaonim that Shittim Kubetzis is referencing. So I don't know whether they mean, for example, that she meant that your sister was there. Obviously, his Shmuel's sister was there at the table. Obviously, did she mean you should have passed it to her first or what? I don't know. What? Maybe the sister's husband?
Like
that what? No, there wouldn't
why
be a reason.
Why would the wife
come in front
of that's right. So I guess what it means. Yeah, the point is. The point is she's not taking the cup because she's Tomei. She's not taking it because maybe she felt that Shmuel should have passed it to his sister first. Whatever it is. But again, the point is that technically that's valid. That's an amasla. But Shmuel was machmir on himself. Then I'm going to give another example.
So
that's the thing. The Goyim don't have the girsa like Havas Bichela. They have the girsa. They have the girsa mishum kvoido da choisei, because of the honor of your sister. Therefore, I didn't want to take the cup. Then I'm going to give other examples of a valid amasla. For example, you could have that the
wasn't married.
What's that got to do with anything? I don't know. Anyway, then I'm going to give an example also involving a sister. Let's say, for example, the wife's sister or mother or whatever is staying with them for a few days. If the husband wants to have relations, she might say, Tmeyani, because it's embarrassing. You know, the walls are thin, and then my relatives are going to hear what's going on or whatever for privacy reasons. That could be one. That could be another example. Various things like that are acceptable as an amasla.
She could also have seen a stain.
That's another example that some mafoshim bring. That let's say, for example, she found blood on her clothes, so she thought she was nidah. Later on, she did a proper bedikah and found that it wasn't, that it was a wound or something. Yeah, that would be another example of an amasla. Yeah. So we're saying all that's valid. On the other hand, later on in the masechta, we're going to learn, and the post can talk about this extensively, that in some cases we don't even accept an amasla. If she, the Gemara mentions later on in the masechta, chuchzika nida b'shcheneseha, that if there's a chazaka among her neighbors that she's a nida, in those days, for example, women used to wear different clothes when they were nida. Probably it was older clothes, so that in case they get blood on them, they, you know, big deal, they can throw them in the trash more easily, whatever. If she goes that far that the neighbors already realize by the clothes she's wearing that she's a nidah, then no, you don't accept an amasla. She wouldn't have gone that far. She wouldn't have gone that far if it wasn't true.
Well, but Shmuel,
how
is that a private thing? How do people know that he didn't tell
them? No, but maybe one time he did tell them many years later. I don't know. You know, this happened to me and I was machmer on myself. And by the way, the Beis Yosef points out from this, you see from this that you're allowed to be machmir in such a situation, and it's not considered chassidus shel shtus to do that. Now they talk about that maybe you do at least, I mean, given that there is a mitzvah of oina, you do need your wife's consent to be able to do that. So yes, if he wants to be machmir on himself, he would have had to clear it with his wife first. Anyway, Tananabanan, another din. If you have two Edim that come and say that a woman's husband is dead, and two others come and say he's not dead, or two of them say that she was divorced, two of them say that she wasn't divorced, then she should not get married. But if she married, she doesn't have to divorce. But Pashtus, we're talking about one after the other. We learned in Yuvamis that if the first set came and they gave her the heter to marry, that's different. So yeah, it could be. We learned about in Yuvamis when he said Vasachas, what it means Vasachas exactly. Does it literally mean at the same time, or does it mean before the heter was given? Rabbi Nachman, Bar Yosi, Eima Teitzei. Whereas Rabbi Nachman Bar Yosi says she does have to get divorced, even in that case. Amar Rabbi Nachman Bar Yosi, Eima Sayani, Eima Teitzei. When would I say that she has to get divorced? Bizman Shabo Edim, Bach Kach Nisis. If the Edim came, and only then did she get married. So once the second Edim came, she should have known, you know what, there's a suffix over here, I shouldn't really be getting married. But if she married based on the first Edim, and then the second Edim came, then she doesn't have to divorce, because she did the right thing. She got married based on the first Edim.
But the suffix is still the same.
We'll talk about that soon. We'll talk about that now. The question is, Mechti Tre Tre Ninu. Isn't it, even in that case, you have two against two, Habala Ba'asham Talui Koi, and therefore her second husband, who she remarries, is going to be Chayev and Asham Talui, because you have a suffix of a situation of Kares over here. Tosfos talks about over here, that's not literally an Asham Talui necessarily, because we learned in Yevamos that an Asham Talui needs certain criteria, and particularly you have to have the Shtei Chatichas, The classic case of Asham Talui is you have two pieces of fat in front of you. One of them is Chalev, one of them is Truman. You're not sure which one is which, and you ate one of them, and the other one got lost or whatever. Here, there's no two Chatichas because it's one woman. So not necessarily would it be a matter of...
A woman with two specific situations.
Right, so okay, in Shittim Mekubetis it brings over there the possibility that maybe you could understand it according to the opinion Shtei Chatichas, because each set of Edim would be considered like a different Chaticha. But Tosfos says over here not necessarily are we saying over here, we mean literally in Asham Talui, we just mean something that could potentially, something that in certain cases it involves. In other words, we're just using that to describe how severe an issue it is. So how do we allow her to stay married?
That's right.
Yes, but the case is talking about where she actually married one of the Edim. What's the point, Rashi says, when do you bring an Asham Talui? If you yourself have reason to think that you're not certain about the situation, the case with the two pieces of fat, you ate one of them, the other one got lost, you yourself now are thinking to yourself, you know what, after all, did I eat the chalev or did I eat the shulam? Here, the Edim themselves obviously take a know for a fact, not just take it, they know for a fact the guy is dead because they saw him dead, therefore there's no Asham Talui. An Asham Talui is a korban that you bring if you do certain averus, if you're not sure whether you did certain averus. In this case, the eid is certain that he didn't do anything. Okay, the question is, he go for the Asham Talui timer. Fine, but doesn't she herself have the Asham Talui issue? She herself maybe is not completely certain. The answer is by Meres Borili. Yes, but we're talking about the case where she herself says, you know what, there's no question about it. I believe these Edim 100% because if my husband was alive, he would have come back by now. So therefore, neither of them has a suffix, and therefore neither of them is involved with an Asham Talui. And therefore, B'dievet, and therefore, if she got married and then the later Edim showed up, we'll allow her to stay married.
It sounds like really subjective, but it's like factual.
In this case, I mean, there's the usual rule, Isha Daiko Mintzavo, there's the usual rule that we learned in Yevamos, that a woman is very careful about checking out the situation before she remarries, because she knows all the penalties that we learned over there in Yevamos, the 16 different penalties that she's going to suffer if it turns out that her first husband was alive after all. Tosfos points out that chazaka of Isha Daiko Mintzavo actually is strong enough that we say that normally you would think we would say, we learned in Yevamos that if you have two Edim against two Edim, then you go back to the original Chazaka. Well, her original Chazaka was that she was an Eishes Ish, that she was a married woman. Why are we allowing her to be married? Because the Chazaka of Isha Daiko Mintzava is strong enough to weaken that original Chazaka of Eishes Ish.
Shadaika means she has the characters and the temperament to be serious and to...
Yeah, have, yeah. Because she knows that she's going to suffer. She and her children are going to suffer a lot of consequences if it turns out that it's wrong. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, shneim emim meis or shneim emim loy meis. If two again, if you have two edim say that a man is dead and two say he's not dead, how is a loy tinase? Then she shouldn't get married. V'im nisus loy teitze. But if she did get married, then b'diavad she doesn't have to get divorced. But But if two Edim said she was divorced and two other Edim said she wasn't divorced, she also shouldn't remarry. But in this case, even if she married, we will force her and her husband to divorce. So the question is, what's the difference between the two cases? Why is saying that he's dead better than saying that they're divorced? Amar Abaya, Tugma be'ed echad. You have to explain, you have to reinterpret when Rabbi Yochanan says two edim versus two edim, he doesn't actually mean two edim. He means one aid. He means one aid says that somebody is dead and one says he's not. So what happened? Okay, but it means that they have the power of two. So listen. Aid echad omen meis, because if one aid says that a man is dead, heimnu rabbanon kebeit today, the rabbanon believe him as if he were two. V'chidu ula, like ula says, which we learned in Yubamas, da'ama ula, kol makam she'amina Torah aid echad, wherever the Torah believes one aid, as in our case over here, to be master a woman, to remarry after her husband, when we don't know if her, when we're not sure if her husband is dead, one aid is good enough to say that he's dead, and we believe him, we consider it as if it's two, harei kan shnayim. Therefore, b'hai dekama lo meis ha'v leichad. Later on, when another aid comes and says he's not dead, he's considered only one aid. So we ignore one aid in the face of two. So therefore, that's why we're saying in the first part of Rabbi Yochanan's din that she's allowed that she shouldn't be married, but we're not going to force her to divorce because she does have the equivalent of two aidim to rely on. It's only one physical aid, but we consider him to be as if he was two. Because we said in Yevamos that the cases where we believe one aid, it means that one aid has the power of two aidim in all other cases. Usually, al pishnayim aidim yakum dava, you need two aidim to establish the truth of something. This is one of the cases where we say that one aid is enough, and that one aid therefore has the full power of aidus. The full power of aidus usually is two aidim. So therefore, so much so that even when he's contradicted later on by another aid, you have two against one. Well, then the two went out. The question is, well, by that logic, why don't we say that she can get remarried? What's the problem? The answer is, Mishum de Rav Asi. True, but you have what Rav Asi said. D'amar Rav Asi, Rav Asi said, and this is actually a pasuk in Mishlei, Hasim mimecha ikshus peh, remove from yourself the crookedness of lips, v'lazus, zus really is the Lashon HaPasuk, v'lazus v'asayim, hafek mimecha, and take away from yourself the talking of lips. Meaning, Rav Asi used to quote this, Mefarshim explain, Tosfos says over here that it's a pasuk. The reason why we're saying that Rav Asi said it is because this was Rav Asi's famous statement. When you have a situation like this, when you have a case which it looks bad to people, don't do it, because you're going to make people are going to talk against you.
Then do what?
In this case over here, we're saying that you have one aide comes and says her husband is dead, but then one aide comes and says he's not. Don't get married because it's going to make people talk. It's going to seem very strange. People are going to realize this whole lumdus over here, one aid counts as two, etc. It's going to look bad. But Rav Asi used to quote this pasuk to say, don't do that kind of thing. But b'di'evit, you did it.
Implying that it's okay.
So it's fine. No, implying that b'di'evit, it's fine. But you should avoid it.
Belongs to the woman.
B'pashas to the woman.
What belongs?
Well, he's addressing the woman. Don't you? No, he's not. B'pashas, he's not addressing the beis din. He's addressing the woman. Don't you go and marry with? Yeah. There are Mepharshim actually who explain a little bit differently that in context, the pasuk over there doesn't necessarily mean prevent that you should make sure to act in a way that other people won't talk against you. In context, the pasuk can be talking about that you should be careful not to be talking against other people. Rav Asi is the one who came and gave that pasuk a twist to say that it also means don't do things that will cause other people to talk against you. If two actual edim come, that's different. But here we're saying only one aid came. So even though we give him the power of two, nevertheless, there's this ikshus peril zus v'sayim business. Okay, so that's the resha. Sefer, what about the second part of Rabbi Yochanan's din? Again, even though Rabbi Yochanan had said two aidim, let's say we're actually talking about one aid saying one way and one the other. Well, aid echad omer niskarsha, ve'aid echad omer lo niskarsha. Well, if one aid says she was divorced and one aid says she was not, we have to consider tavayu be'eshes ish kamasidi. Effectively, both of them are saying aiders that at one time she was married. Behind you call niskarsha havalechad, the one who's saying she's divorced is only one aid, because the other one claims that she's still married. Again, you're back to, you can't have one aid contradict two. That's why we're saying that even b'di'evad, she'll have to get divorced. Because both of them are giving aiders that at one time she was married, and only one of them is saying, but now she's divorced. That's a bias.
Say aiders against himself.
Effectively, yeah. Is it? Well, yeah. Effectively saying aid was against what he said, yeah.
And she was married to two people, and one to
the... Yeah. That's Abaya's answer. Rava Amar La'olam Tereyu Treininu. Rava says no. You could actually say that Rabbi Yochanan's din is talking in each case. There were actually two edim that say that he's dead, two that say he's not, two that say she's divorced, two that say she's not. But what happened? We mentioned before that there was a machloikas tanoim on this. We said that there was a Tanakama versus Rabbi Nachman bar Yosi. Well, Rabbi Yochanan agrees with Rabbi Nachman Rabbi Yosi. He sees that what he's saying is logical when it comes to divorce, but not when it comes to death. My time, why would that be? Because when it comes to death, she can't contradict him. What's going to happen? She's claiming, two Adim come and say that he's dead. She's saying, like we said before, fine. Bari Li, you know what, I know for sure. The Adim know what they're talking about. Obviously, if he was dead, he would have come back. Let's go get married. Well, what happens if her husband shows up? There's no way that she can contradict him and say, you're dead after all. It shows that she wasn't careful enough. So therefore, so she is going to have to be very, very careful that he's dead, because otherwise she's going to be humiliated in public.
How can he be?
Only
with the Eved, right. Gerushin Yechola Machashase, whereas when it comes to Gerushin, even if he comes and claims and says, I never divorced you, she might very well say, no, you did divorce me. The question is,
So therefore,
with Gerushin, the fact that there were two Adim saying that she was divorced, but since they're contradicted by two others who say she's not divorced, that's not good enough then, because we don't accept. If she may try to rely on those first two Adim when in fact she wasn't properly divorced, and say, you know what, so even if my husband comes, big deal, it'll be my word against his. Question is, really, would a woman be so chutzpahdik? So if a woman says to her husband, you divorced me, then we believe her. Because the chazaka that a woman is not going to be so brazen in front of her husband as to say that he divorced her if he didn't. Incidentally, in Shulchan Aruch, it says that nowadays that chazaka doesn't necessarily apply anymore. Yeah. Anyway.
To get false
aid
to come and say that he's...
Not even necessarily false aid. Mephoshim must say that, for example, you could have one of those cases that we talked about the other day where, for example, he threw her the get, and we're not sure whether it landed closer to him or closer to her kind of thing. The answer is, Hani Mili Hecha Deleka Adim become a Sayala, you're right. If there are no Adim backing her up, then you're right. A normal woman is not going to be so chutzpahdik as to claim to her husband that you divorced me when he didn't. Aval Hecha the Ika Adim become a Sayala, but if there are Adim that are backing her up, Mi'iza, then she will be so chutzpahdik. So she will say, in other words, you know what, I have Adim backing me up. They're claiming that there was a divorce over here. Therefore, I'm going to stick to my word. And even if my husband comes and says that in fact, he never divorced me, I'm going to say, but you know what, I have Adim to back me up. Whereas if there were no Adim, then yes, then we would take what she says at face value. So therefore, we say even Midyavit is no good, right? Rabasi, Amar, third answer. Rabasi says, "Kegun d'amri edim achshav meis achshav girsha." The two cases of Rabbi Yochanan would be that the second edim come and say that when they say loy meis, they don't mean he didn't die at all. They meant he didn't die at the time that you guys claimed. He's dead now, but that was later. The same thing with the gerushin. Now, later on, after the time when you were first talking about, is when he divorced her. So, misa leka levaruta. When it comes to death, it's not necessarily you're not necessarily going to be able to check it out so easily. If they say, for example, Rashi gives examples. If they say that he drowned or was eaten by a lion or whatever, you're not going to find a body to be able to easily tell when the death took place. So therefore, given that we can't prove one way or the other when he died, so we'll say lachatchila she shouldn't get married based on the first Adim. But if she did, and now the second Adim came and said that, you know what, at the time he was alive and later on he died, that's not strong enough evidence to force her to get divorced. As we said before, she married one of the Adim. Whereas Gerushin ikul avarura. Whereas when it comes to Gerushin, you can easily check it out. Damarin law im isa dehachi hava. If you claim that you were divorced as of the date when the first Adim came, achli lam gittach. Show us your get. It has a date on it, and we'll be able to tell very easily. And therefore, if she can't do that, then we can't allow her to have married based on those first Adim. We throw out their edus completely, and therefore she shouldn't have gotten married. And therefore, even if she married, we force her to get divorced. So that would be the difference between the cases according to Rabasi.
She needs to to be divorced, although...
Well, at least Midrabanan, as we learned in Yevamos, should have the various penalties over there, but yes. Yeah.